welcome to the Buckmaster Show for Thursday, January 20th, 2011, our third week of this new broadcasting adventure in Tucson, Arizona. I am Bill Buckmaster, your host for the Buckmaster Show on KJLL AM 1330, and we're always on the World Wide Web at buckmastershow.com. We are live weekdays from 9 to 10 a.m., and the program re-airs from 7 to 8 p.m. here on KJLL. Got a great lineup on today's program. We're going to start off with a newsmaker interview with Joe Snell. Mr. Snell heads the leading economic development group in the Tucson Valley. Also, we'll talk with the organizers of the Tucson Community Gardens Project, and we'll check in with Dr. David Levy, one of the world's most successful comet discoverers. The Buckmaster Show is primarily an interview-driven talk show, but there is always room for listener comments and questions. You can call us on the Buckmaster Show live line, and that number is open right now at 529-3508. We begin the Buckmaster Show with a newsmaker interview with Joe Snell. Mr. Snell is the president and CEO of Tucson Regional Economic Opportunities, Incorporated, known as TREO. And Mr. Snell, good to see you. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Bill. Thanks for having me. It's and congratulations on your new venture. I have to tell you, I like the radio format because I didn't have to wear a tie.
Yeah, you didn't have to get dressed up.
No.
Plus, there's another advantage from the work we used to do together, Joe, on TV. You have a view here, don't you?
View of the mountains. I'm not in the basement.
We're not in the basement.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you so much. You're looking here at the lovely Catalinas. Mr. Snell, I know you, along with all of the business community and all of us, for that matter, were shocked by the Tucson shooting slaughter, really, that's what it was, of January the 8th. The implications of a steady stream of truly horrible news with the dateline Tucson, Arizona, certainly can't spell in the short term any good news for economic developers like yourself and your organization that's trying to bring new business to the community.
Yeah, Bill, I mean, it's a tough question. What are the impacts of the shooting? Before I even get into that, I'd like to extend my deepest thoughts and prayers to all the victims that suffered that Saturday. I do have to make this comment, though. Out of the tragedy, I think that the Tucson region has displayed an incredible sense of unity and coming together. That maybe for the first time in my 5 years, I truly understand the uniqueness and the specialness of being a Tucsonan. So out of this tragedy, I'm very proud to live here and be a part of this community.
You know, I've been in the business a long time, Mr. Snell, 42 years doing news, and this one hit me so personally. I've known Congresswoman Giffords on a personal basis. I knew her when she was first running for state office. So this one was not just like any news story.
No,
it was personal. I know her. I know some of the other people that were involved. After the shock wore off, I have to tell you, I have never been prouder of this community and the way we responded, from the medical responders to all of the people who offered their prayers and the vigils that went on. I've never been prouder of this community.
Indeed, I agree. What does this mean for us long term from an economic development standpoint? Does it hurt our opportunity to recruit companies or expand them? The honest answer, Bill, is I don't think anybody fully knows what those impacts will be. I personally don't believe it's going to impact us negatively because I do believe people will separate the actions of a lone gunman and from a community. I don't think they're going to tie those together. Had a very similar experience, and you hate to draw comparisons, but I ran economic development in Denver when the Columbine massacre occurred. And if it plays out anything like that over the long term, short term, yeah, I think that there was a lot of media attention on Denver at the time, but over the long term, it really didn't impact Denver's ability to do business.
We're talking with Joe Snell. Mr. Snell heads up TREO, the economic development engine, really, here in Tucson, the main economic developer. I want to call your attention to yesterday's Arizona Republic, January 19th, the lead editorial, the issue, economic development, Brewer's Agenda Can Put the State on the fast track. And basically, within a month, Governor Brewer's office says that they will be asking legislative leaders to go into special session to approve a package of economic competitiveness measures. I know you've had a chance to look at some of those measures. What do you think of them?
Well, I think it's a step in the right direction. You know, Bill, Arizona, since 2007, we've lost nearly 300,000 jobs in the state of Arizona. As we begin to climb out of this recession, we face some challenges. Most of our competitor states have smaller budget deficits, significantly stronger economic development tools. And I think that her timing is and her priorities are right on. We've got to restore some jobs, diversify this economy, getting away from growth-related industries. So not knowing all the details that are going to go into her package, I think it's a right step. I'm encouraged by the new Commerce Authority that she's established, which is really a step away from the Department of Commerce that I think was, to be frank, bogged down in a lot of bureaucracy. So I think more of a business approach is welcomed, and we do need some tools to compete with the other states. And I think so. Some of the things she's presenting are very timely, and I'm encouraged, actually.
It's 13 minutes past the hour, and this is the Buckmaster Show, and Joe Snell is with me in studio from TRIO. How is Arizona doing in economic recovery when you compare this state to the so-called competitor states, some of our neighbors like New Mexico? And I know, Joe, you spent time working in Albuquerque and mm-hmm. economic development there. Colorado is one mm-hmm. of our competitor states, your old stomping grounds up in Denver. We compete with Texas. Mm-hmm. We compete with the Salt Lake area and that region. How are we doing in our recovery when you compare those areas?
Well, I think a lot of ways we were hit much harder than those other states with the recession because our over-reliance on home building and some of those industries. And when the mortgage crisis hit and the recession hit, you know, the bottom fell out for us pretty significantly. So we, you know, we felt the pain maybe even more significant than some of the other states. We also went into the recession a little bit earlier than some of these states. The Mountain West states like Colorado, New Mexico, specifically Colorado, they're just feeling those maybe where we were a year and a half ago, those ills of the recession. Overall, I think we've competed very well, actually. You know, we've had two major announcements in the last 6 months.
Yeah, that Roche deal was huge. I mean, Roche is an international pharmaceutical company that I think the business, people know Roche. It's a huge name in pharmaceuticals. And they made a decision to come to Tucson. Over what other areas did they look at?
Well, they had looked at, according to their site selection team, Indianapolis, Northern California, New Jersey, and then Tucson were the four markets that they shortlisted to put these new jobs into. And we were fortunate to win that under some very fierce competition. And then we also had the Sargent Aerospace and Controls expansion that happened in August in virtually the same cities we were competing with, which is baffling to me. I don't know if there's a pattern emerging. But when you look at those kind of announcements, a major aerospace player and then the Roche job, given there's so many and the wages are so high, not many of our competitor markets have seen these kind of announcements in the last 18 months.
You're talking 500 jobs there in the Oro Valley area.
500 jobs. We've done a fiscal and economic impact analysis and are projecting that to be about $600 million positive impact to this region over the next few years.
Talk about the people that you consult with, some of the CEOs. We have some really outstanding CEOs in this community. Who are the people that you interface with? Who are the people that are giving you advice on some of the economic decisions in this community?
Yeah, Bill,
I know you have like a chairman's council.
We do. And as you recall, TRIO has created a much stronger balance between private and public sector governance, if you will, and advisors. In the early years of TRIO, we were almost nearly dependent on government funding and government advice. That has flipped largely at this point, and we have very deep participation from the private sector at the highest levels. I'll throw out some names because I think they're worth mentioning because they're great advisors. People like Paul Bonavia that run
TEP.
TEP. Yeah. Steve Egan, the CFO with Raytheon Missile Systems. Newest addition to our chairman circle, Judy Rich with
Tucson Medical Center.
Jim Click, I can go on. Ruth Brinkley with Carondelet Healthcare.
And you get together with these people then on a regular basis. They all sit down at a table and talk about what is the right direction for our community.
We do. We've frequently. And, it's important that we have the people that are actually creating jobs having major input on the policies that affect job creation and the marketing that goes on.
How fierce is the competition with, and I know we talked about some of the competitor states and areas like Albuquerque and Salt Lake City. Is it in the bottom line? Is the bottom line who can offer the best incentives? Is that how big a deal is that?
It's not the ultimate driver, because the problem in getting into a bidding war with incentives is somebody else has always got a bigger checkbook. And we recently returned from Huntsville, Alabama, because we had wanted to get down there and study a little bit of what they were doing. And, the western states compared to the southeastern states, it's partly the way they're structured with such a reliance on property tax, we don't even have the mechanisms to even apply those incentives if we wanted to. Ultimately, the driver in the economy, and I've said this many times on your TV show, is labor. Labor drives all market decisions. So ultimately, even when we look back to the Roche expansion, they were very clear that the first thing they were looking for in any community was a community that allowed them to fill the talent they needed, and a lot of scientists and highly educated people. So in our case, the strength of the university and the science that comes out of there, the science is amazing. We're very fortunate here.
So workforce has got to be right at the top.
It is.
If you don't have the people in the community, why would you move to that community if you can't find the people to fill the jobs?
There's not enough money in the world if you can't fill the people. So, you can't win if you don't have
them. I mean, even if you offer tremendous incentives, and as you say, who's got the biggest checkbook, you get in a bidding war. But ultimately, they'll look at, well, can I fill these X amount of jobs with the kind of talented people that I need?
That's exactly right. And then there's a lot that goes into the quality of life of a city. Do we have adequate transportation systems? Not so much, from my perspective, for any other reason than can I move my people around? Are they sitting in commutes? It's all about the labor equation.
Yeah, they're spending an hour in traffic like is the case where I used to work up in the Bay Area. I mean, it used to be we joke about the Bay Area where you'd leave 2 hours before you needed to be at work. Now it's like it's 24/7 rush hour up in Silicon Valley.
You know, there was a study by a group in Los Angeles a few years ago, and they asked Californians to define quality of life because it's hard to put your finger on. The number one issue they pointed to quality of life was commute times. And if you've ever, spent a lot of time in Southern California sitting on the road to go 4 hours a day, 2 hours to work and 2 hours coming home, really does diminish quality of life. So those are all the factors. Education is all part of that labor mix. You have to have all those ingredients before you're even shortlisted or considered a finalist. Now, incentives do matter because there are a lot of markets that have all the key ingredients, and then it comes down to maybe offsetting some of the heavy upfront capital costs to going into a major project. And like them, don't like them, the reality is communities and states employ incentives. And in some cases, in the tens of millions of dollars.
Okay, I've got about a minute left. We've been talking with Joe Snell. He heads up TRIO. Now, I know when you meet with your CEOs and your community leaders, you'll be talking about some of the goals for 2011. You'll be meeting with them probably within a few days with some of these leaders. To summarize here, what are you going to be looking for? What will be considered a successful year in 2011?
Well, we're going to want to make sure that we stay very aggressive in our national and international marketing of Tucson as a business center. And we're going to make sure we spend plenty of resources doing that because, frankly, we got a lot to sell. One of our biggest challenges. A lot of people, from a business standpoint, don't really know Tucson that well. So we're promoting that a lot. The second is to put some pressure at government at all levels and make sure we have policies that are industry friendly.
Yeah, that you get a good legislative session. Yeah. Make it work for you. Joe Snell, it's been a pleasure. Good luck to you in 2011 and the work you're doing with TRIO and bringing economic development and making this a center for good, high-paying jobs in the Tucson Valley. Have a great day. Thanks for being
with us. Thank you,
Bill. Thanks.
The Arizona Inn is the only Tucson hotel named by Travel and Leisure magazine as one of the top 500 hotels in the world for 2011. Located in Midtown, close to the University of Arizona, the Arizona Inn is located at 2200 East Elm Street and on the web at arizonainn.com. The Arizona Inn maintains AAA four diamond status for both the hotel and dining room, with Chef Allison serving up breakfast, lunch, and dinner daily, with a featured menu and seasonal favorites. And because the Arizona Inn is listed on the National Register of Historic Places, founded by Arizona's first Congresswoman, Isabella Greenway, the Arizona Inn provides an historic backdrop for your next special event. Arizona Inn is the perfect setting for weddings, anniversary celebrations, or your next business meeting, and you can make your reservations online at arizonainn.com. The Arizona Inn, luxury and elegance in the heart of Tucson.
Sarnoff Artist Materials is your one-stop store for fine and graphic artist supplies, framing, stationery, and Mont Blanc and other top-of-the-line writing instruments. Order online at sarnoffart.com or visit owner-operator Henry Sarnoff and his store staffed by artists, for artists, and those who seek the finest quality in everything art-related. Sarnoff Artist Materials, 2504 North Campbell, three blocks north of Grant, and always at sarnoffart.com.
Taste pizza as it was meant to be at Vero More, Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan pizza, topped with the finest, freshest quality ingredients. Enjoy casual yet upscale dining while sampling our extensive boutique wine list. Vero More in Tucson at North Swan and Camp Lowell, Dove Mountain in Marana, and on the web at veromorepizza.com. And coming soon, Noble Hops, Tucson's first gastro pub.
It's 24 minutes past the hour on the Buckmaster Show at buckmastershow.com and KJLL AM 1330. Ruben Navarrete Jr. is a member of the USA Today Board of Contributors. He's a syndicated columnist and a commentator for National Public Radio, and he had an editorial in USA Today yesterday. Basically, he was saying that President Obama must not neglect Mexico's drug war. And in a moment here, we're going to be bringing in the Buckmaster Show border contributor, Keith Rosenblum. Keith is a former reporter for the Arizona Republic and the Arizona Daily Star. And we're trying to make contact with Keith. And he spends a lot of time in Mexico. In fact, we understand he is on a bus to Hermosillo at this very moment. And we have Keith Rosenblum with us on the phone right now. Keith, can you hear me?
Hi, Bill. Good morning. You're kind of a victim of the loud sounds of the Elite bus between Hermosillo and Guaymas right now. I'll do my best to help answer the questions that you ask. But anyway, I'll do my best. And if I lose you, I promise next time we talk that I'll be somewhere where there's silence.
Okay. Bottom line on this USA Today editorial, Keith, Mexico's drug war is now a threat to U.S. security. What do you say to that statement by this Mr. Navarrete?
Okay.
Keith, can you...
Yes, I could hear you.
Okay.
The Mexican drug war, or what's happening in...
Hey, Keith, we're losing you. We're going to try to make contact again with you here in a moment. But Mr. Navarrete's point was that many Americans see Mexico as a dysfunctional family in the neighborhood. And with the start of the new year and a new Congress, President Obama needs to persuade the American people to see Mexico in a different light as one of the most explosive countries in a region capable of creating a major foreign policy crisis for the United States. And Mr. Navarrete contends that there's no better time to start than President Obama's upcoming State of the Union address. And thanks to Mexico's narco nightmare, our backyard is on fire. At least that's what he's saying. And according to figures recently released by Mexico's Attorney General, the number of deaths in drug-related violence since President Calderon took office 4 years ago has now surpassed 30,000 deaths. And we're still having a little problem with getting Keith Rosenblum to comment on this on the phone. And I think Keith would be disagreeing with what Mr. Navarrete is saying, that basically Mr. Navarrete is saying that you can chalk up a few of the 30,000 killings to a notorious drug cartel hit. And we're going to try again with Keith. Go ahead, Keith.
Hi there once again, Bill. We're talking about the response of both the USA Today editorial and also what has become now an ongoing daily issue about the drug war spreading across the border. And what I wanted to say is, from someone who sees this at the ground level constantly, that this has always been a single battle, and to all of a sudden say, oh my goodness, it's affecting us in the U.S. now, what do we do? Is in many ways a patronizing and probably even a racially a kind of a prejudice or superiority, because we now decide that a Mexican life somehow is less valuable than a U.S. life. And my take on this has been that for a long time that Mexico has been fighting a U.S. proxy war anyway, because if you live in or spend time in Mexico, you know that the problem itself is a fraction of what it is, if at all, what it is in the United States. And my belief has been that the United States for a long time has had the Mexicans pretty much doing the dirty work. And of course, it's eventually going to spread. And until we, to me anyhow, until we learn the lessons from Prohibition, the ongoing escalation is just a terrible waste of manpower, money, and lost opportunities.
So, Keith, quickly, Mexico's drug war is now a threat to U.S. security, yes or no?
It's always been. It just happens that borders in so many ways are artificial anyway. We have a Latin America within the United States. We have the United States within Mexico and Latin America. And to say somehow the geographical border matters is really self-defeating and irrelevant. Yes, it is an issue, but it has always been. And because now things happen to be happening with U.S. daylines on them and not with Sonora or Chihuahua or Baja daylines on them, to me is secondary. This has been an ongoing issue. And to me, it's just a one-upsmanship escalation, and there's really no end in sight. In fact, in Sonora, I've just been reading the Daily News paper today, they just acquired a new helicopter, drone, and so the attempt to one-up the cartels continues. But it's, in the end, for Mexicans and for me,
Thank you, Keith. And the Buckmaster Show, speaking with Keith Rosenblum on a bus to Hermosillo. We're not afraid to go anywhere on the Buckmaster Show, Antarctica or on a bus to Hermosillo.
KJLL, South Tucson.
More than 100 accused mobsters are under arrest after raids today in New York, New Jersey, and Rhode Island. Attorney General Eric Holder says some are accused of murder.
In one instance, a victim was allegedly shot and killed during a botched robbery attempt. And two other murder victims allegedly were shot in a public bar because of a dispute over a spilled drink.
We'll hear from the husband of Gabrielle Giffords in a few minutes. Mark Kelly will update us on the Congresswoman's condition as she recovers from the January 8th shooting in Tucson. Giffords has been able to stand and lift her head. You might not see as many for sale signs in your neighborhood. A new report from Realtors found sales of existing homes jumped 12% in December. The jobs report released by the government today shows 37,000 fewer people filed first-time unemployment claims for the previous week. The most trusted name in news. This is CNN Radio.
Hey, Kelly. So, who'd you hire to do your emails?
What? You know it's just me here.
Come on, I got your newsletter. Pretty fancy. Photos, coupons. Come on, who is it?
Oh, no one, silly. I use Constant Contact.
Really?
With ConstantContact.com, it's so easy. They make me look like $1 million, and the emails really work.
Oh, yeah?
It got you in here today, didn't it?
Touché.
ConstantContact.com. Plans as low as $15 a month with a free 60-day trial.
Extortion, racketeering, illegal gambling, arson.
Deliver your pizza in 30 minutes or it's free.
Turn left ahead.
If I don't, my boss isn't happy. So I rely on the right guidance to get me where I need to go.
Turn left now.
I feel the same about my taxes. TurboTax has a unique GPS feature that guides me step by step. It automatically double checks along the way, which helps me know it's done right and get my maximum refund guaranteed.
Try it online now at TurboTax.com. Choose easy. Money back guarantee details at TurboTax.com.
Listed on the National Register of Historic Places and founded by Isabella Greenway, Arizona's first congresswoman, the Arizona Inn is still the standard bearer for luxury hospitality in Midtown Tucson, just minutes from the University of Arizona. Founded in 1930, the Arizona Inn continues to win top honors for hospitality and dining. Travel and Leisure magazine names the Arizona Inn one of the top 500 hotels in the world for 2011. And the Arizona Inn is proud of its AAA four diamond status for both the hotel and dining room. Whether it's for breakfast, lunch, or dinner, or a private event, you can count on Chef Allison's featured seasonal culinary creations to please. The Arizona Inn, a special oasis of hospitality in Midtown Tucson, 2200 East Elm, and on the web at arizonainn.com.
Hi, I'm Mark Sullivan.
About 33 minutes past the hour. This is the Buckmaster Show on KJLL. I am Bill Buckmaster. We're always on 24/7 on buckmastershow.com. And it's been an interesting morning. We talked, our leadoff guest was Joe Snell from Trio, talking about economic development. Then we had a rather difficult phone connection with Keith Rosenblum, who covers the border for us here on the Buckmaster Show. He was on a bus to Hermosillo, so the connection wasn't all that bad, but we are not afraid to go anywhere in the world to bring folks the information. Monday, we actually had a hookup with Antarctica and a Tucson researcher who's on the ice searching for meteorites. But right now, we turn our attention to community gardens. They are sprouting up all over the Tucson area. What's it all about? We'll explore that question next and take your gardening questions at 529-3508. With me in studio is Gene Zong, one of the leaders of the Community Gardens of Tucson. It's an all-volunteer group devoted to promoting health, knowledge, and a sense of community through gardening. Gene, thanks for being with us.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
Tell me about how you got associated with Community Gardens of Tucson.
Actually, it's pretty simple. I joined the Tucson CSA, where you subscribe to vegetables that you go and pick up once a month, and then I brought them home every week, and I would wash them and prepare them and things. And my wife kept saying, you can grow these. And so I investigated community gardening, and there happens to be one very close to my home. So I joined that garden, and then slowly but surely, like all volunteer organizations, they ask you to do more and more, and now I'm the president of the organization.
George Brookbank, I believe, a name in this community associated with gardening. Was this his idea more than several years? When did this all come about?
20 years ago, George Brookbank founded our organization, and he's still on the board of directors, so he still helps guide us.
So tell us about how it works. Where are these community gardens located in the Tucson Valley?
They're all over the city. We have about 15 of them now. I could probably throw a rock from here and hit one from your studio here. They're just everywhere. So the listeners need to go to our website and look on the website. There's a map there.
Give us the website.
www.communitygardensoftucson.org. The only hard part is remembering the .org.
Yeah.
The rest is
.org. And I went on, checked it out. It's a really terrific website, and there are a million questions and answers about gardening on this website. It's very user friendly. So, what's the definition, as far as you're concerned, of a community garden?
That's a good question, because I think we don't know if I've never looked this up to verify if it's a Webster definition or not, but it's our definition. We distinguish between communal gardening and community gardening. In communal gardening, everyone gardens on one piece of shared land. They all plant in the same spot. They all harvest from the same spot. They all work together that way. And what we found is that there are going to be some people that work really hard. They do a lot of planting, a lot of weeding, a lot of work in the garden. And there are going to be other people who come in right when the stuff is ripe and take it out, and they won't have contributed anything. And it leads to hard feelings and resentment. And so we don't do communal gardening. We do community gardening, where each gardener is assigned their own individual plot. And in that plot, they can grow whatever they want, herbs and vegetables and flowers. We haven't investigated medical marijuana yet, but there might be a possibility. Who knows? Yeah. And then they plant, weed, harvest. They work on their own plot all themselves.
Gene Zong is with us. He's one of the leaders of the Community Gardens of Tucson project. And if any of the Buckmaster Show listeners have gardening questions, and after all, I understand gardening is the number one pastime. It's the number one hobby in America. So if you've got a gardening question about how these very hard freezes, I think we had 3, 4, maybe even 5 of them over the past, 8 weeks here. We had a real early one. 529-3508. How did the hard freezes affect your gardens in town?
Well, that's a good question, Bill, because many, many people probably think that frosts like that are going to kill their vegetable garden, and it's not true. It's amazing. You can go to all of our gardens right now, and you'll see lettuce, cabbage, cauliflower, broccoli, Brussels sprouts, radishes, turnips, peas, carrots, that all survived through the hard frost. And at my home, it got to 21 degrees, so we know that was a really cold area, and it got there twice. But yet all the plants that were planted appropriately for winter planting made it through. Now, if you planted tomatoes or bell peppers or something like that, they're not going to do so well. In fact, they're going to be dead completely. But if you plant per our planting guide, and we have a planting guide that we give all new members, if you plant to that, you're not going to have any trouble with frost.
Why is that? So some of these plants then that are adaptable for the winter season are kind of, there's a built-in, perhaps, anti-frost mechanism in these plants?
You're actually a little above me right there. I don't actually know why they don't freeze, but they don't. They must have some sort of antifreeze in their veins and things. And they might look horrible in the morning. So this is one trick you need to be aware of, is that if you plant those plants and you walk out to your garden first thing in the morning, they could look horrible. They could all be all wilted and down on the ground, but don't touch them. That's the most critical thing. Don't touch them. Don't spray them. Don't try and do anything with them. Let them warm up on their own. And by midday, they'll be perky and look like nothing ever happened.
We have a question that came in on the Buckmaster Show, buckmastershow.com site, and someone was wondering about watering. How often should you water in the winter season? Is once a day too much?
Well, for your trees and shrubs, it sure would be. But we garden rather intensively. Our gardens, we want them to be completely filled with vegetables and flowers. So we water once a day for sure. It's usually about 20 minutes a day in the wintertime, and in the summertime it's twice a day for about 30 minutes. It's all drip irrigation.
And what plants should we be planting at this time of year?
You can be replanting or planting more of the lettuces, radishes, carrots, any of those faster growing winter vegetables you could plant right now and still get good harvests before the hot season comes. You're not going to be wanting to plant any of the big things like the big cabbages and cauliflowers and broccolis, because they're not going to get done before the heat.
We had a question about rose plants, rose bushes. When should that cutting back, and how much should you cut back? Should that be in February when that cutting is done, or should we wait a little bit into March?
Actually, I usually do mine in January.
You do?
Yeah, right about now I'd be doing it. You usually cut back about a third, You cut back a third. I especially cut back the canes that I don't like which way they're going. So I'm trying to do more corrective pruning for shape. But the books always say to cut back by a third.
But when you see the rose bushes, we'll have typically a lot of looks like dead leaves, yellow leaves. All of that area can be cut back at this time.
I'll be cut back. It's going to improve the flowering. Yep.
Let's go back to the community garden concept. How many acres are you talking about when you have a community garden? And who decides where the land? Do people donate this land for the community gardens?
We are always invited into every garden we go into. So the property owner, for some reason, has said, you know, I'm not going to use this land. What can I do with it? And they think of us, and they call us, and we come down and we evaluate it. And because you have to, a lot of people, especially Tucsonans, think you want to garden in the shade. And it's not true. You're going to have a horrible, miserable time if you try to garden in the shade. So a lot of properties are often shaded by giant, huge eucalyptus trees and things. So those are the properties we have to eliminate from possibility. But if it turns out that the property is well suited for gardening, then we come in. We put in our smallest garden is 17 plots. Our plots are 3 feet by 20 feet, and there's 4 foot aisles. So 17 to 18 plots is about, I think, about 40 feet by 60 feet is the size of our smallest garden. Our largest garden is 40 plots. I think it's 120 feet long and 60 feet wide. So it's not even a whole acre. It's just a portion of a very large residential lot. Or we have gardens at public parks, businesses, lots of schools, and lots of churches.
Where would be a good location for someone to go take a look at? Maybe, is there a demonstration garden, or is there one that you would recommend, kind
sure.
of a showcase garden that you'd like people to
There's
see?
There's a really, really easy to access garden at the Havarim congregation, which happens to be the temple that Gabrielle Giffords goes to. That's her home temple. It's not far from here. It's on 2nd Street between Craycroft and Wilmot. The address is 5901 East 2nd. And it's a very open garden, so people could go by there, park in the parking lot, and look through and see the garden.
If someone wants to join up, is there a charge?
Yes. All of our sites are loaned to us by the property owners. We don't own any land ourselves. They loan it to us. And so we reimburse the property owner for all of the water that we use. So, yes, there's a charge. There's a charge of $15 a month. And nearly all that money goes toward the water bills. Some of it goes toward the bi-monthly publication of our newsletter. And then stocking the gardens with tools. All of our gardens are completely stocked with the tools that gardeners will need, so they can walk to the garden, they can ride their bikes or whatever. They don't have to pack their car full of equipment in order to do gardening. We want it to be convenient for the gardeners.
Are you looking at some new sites right now?
Yes. We're looking at new sites. In fact, speaking of Gabrielle Giffords, we have a garden going in the Garden District. It's going right in across the street from her home here in Tucson. We have a garden going on the far northwest side of Tucson at Ina and Thornydale. There's a big demand for community gardening right now, so there's lots of people contacting us for garden sites.
You've been talking to Gene Zong, one of the leaders of the Community Gardens of Tucson. We could take a quick question at 529-3508 on the Buckmaster Show hotline. The benefits of how much will the harvest, how much vegetables can you typically harvest from one of the plots?
That's a good question. We haven't actually done a study ourselves, but we have investigated a study done by another person, and not in Tucson, in another place, and they determined that they could get about $700 worth of organic vegetables out of a plot our size in a year's time. So your fees, your water fees, and your expense of maybe some manure and fertilizers and plants and seeds, that'll add up to probably about $200, $230 here in Tucson, but you'll get a return of $700 on your investment.
What you said, don't plant tomatoes this time of year.
No. Well, you can't plant them in your house.
Well, when would be a good time? I love tomatoes. When should you start thinking about planting the tomatoes outside?
The average last frost date in Tucson is March 15th. Mm-hmm. And so if you're really brave, you can put them in maybe mid to late February and just watch for frost. If you're not so brave, you want to wait until after March 15th.
Gene Zong, thank you very much for being with us. Community Gardens of Tucson, give us that website again and how folks can get some more information.
Our website is www.communitygardensoftucson.org, or you can call 795-8823. 795-8823.
Okay, Gene, thank you very much. Good luck. Happy gardening to you.
Thank you very much.
The Buckmaster Show continues with comet discoverer David Levy. He'll be next.
Hi, I'm Mark Sublett, owner of Medicine Man Gallery, and I'd like to invite you to come visit me. Medicine Man Gallery is located at 7000 East Tinca Verde, at the southwest corner of Tinca Verde and Sabino Canyon, and online at medicinemangallery.com. With 12,000 square feet of exhibit space, we have a wide array of American paintings, antique Indian art, and contemporary modern art by some of the masters of the West, including Ed Mell, John Moyers, and Maynard Dixon. If you have old Indian art or American paintings you'd like to sell or consign, call me for a free evaluation, as we're always looking to add to our collection. If you can't visit us on Tinca Verde, then visit us online. We have over 6,000 objects to view at medicinemangallery.com. So come visit me, Mark Sublett, at Medicine Man Gallery, on the corner of Tinca Verde and Sabino Canyon, where there's always something new to see.
Sarnoff Artist Materials is Tucson's award-winning destination for everything art-related, including fine and graphic artist supplies, framing, stationery, and the world's best writing instruments. Visit owner-operator artist Henry Sarnoff at 2504 North Campbell, three blocks north of Grant, and always at the easy-to-navigate website sarnoffart.com. Because it takes an artist to know an artist's needs.
Vero Amore presents Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan pizza using fresh homemade mozzarella and the finest quality toppings. Taste pizza as it was meant to be at Vero Amore, casual yet upscale dining with an extensive boutique wine list. Vero Amore in Tucson at North Swan and Cap Lowell, Dove Mountain in Marana, and on the web at veroamorepizza.com. Coming soon, Noble Hops, Tucson's first gastro pub.
Hi, I'm Mark Sublett, owner of Medicine Man Gallery, and I'd like to invite you to come visit me. Medicine Man Gallery is located at 7000 East Tinca Verde, at the southwest corner of Tinca Verde and Sabino Canyon, and online at medicinemangallery.com. With 12,000 square feet of exhibit space, we have a wide array of American paintings, antique Indian art, and contemporary modern art by some of the masters of the West, including Ed Mell, John Moyers, and Maynard Dixon. If you have old Indian art or American paintings you'd like to sell or consign, call me for a free evaluation, as we're always looking to add to our collection. If you can't visit us on Tinca Verde, then visit us online. We have over 6,000 objects to view at medicinemangallery.com. So come visit me, Mark Sublett, at Medicine Man Gallery, on the corner of Tinca Verde and Sabino Canyon, where there's always something new to see.
It's 49 minutes past the hour. This is The Buckmaster Show, and I am Bill Buckmaster, reminding you that The Buckmaster Show is brought to you in part by Flowers, Rieger & Associates, certified public accountants, located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com. We are proud here at The Buckmaster Show to say that Flowers Rieger is the CPA firm of The Buckmaster Show. Give Mike Flowers a call. He's a terrific guy and a great CPA. Well, joining us now, Dr. David Levy on The Buckmaster Show. And Dr. Levy is the Buckmaster Show contributor on science. We're pleased to have Dr. Levy among our growing list of contributors to the show. The entire list, along with their bios, is available on our website, buckmastershow.com. Dr. David Levy is one of the most successful comet discoverers in history. He's discovered 23 comets, including his co-discovery of the Shoemaker-Levy 9, the comet that collided with Jupiter in 1994, producing the most spectacular explosions ever witnessed in the solar system. An Emmy Award-winning writer, Dr. Levy is the author or editor of 35 books and other products. He's the former Parade magazine science editor. David Levy, along with his wife Wendy, are the co-founders of the National Sharing the Sky Foundation, an organization intended to inspire new generations to develop an inquiring interest in the sciences, or in other words, to reach for the stars. David Levy, welcome to the Buckmaster Show.
Thank you, Bill. Hello, Bill. How are you?
I am doing so well and having so much fun with this radio show. You and I were together for so many years on television, and now we're together again on radio.
Yeah, this is really good to be with you this morning.
David, I know you, along with so many people, were profoundly impacted by the Tucson shooting incident, and I know Gabrielle Giffords was a very good friend and is, of course, a very good friend of America's space program. After all, she is married to the astronaut Mark Kelly.
Yes, yes, that is true, but there is more than that. I've written her a number of times, although I've never had the honor of meeting her yet. But most of the letters that she wrote, because she's a very busy person, were form letters, since she wrote in response. However, I wrote her a letter once about the space program, and I specifically said in the letter that, in my opinion, it is the crown jewel of the federal government. And in her response to me, it looked as though parts of it were responses that she had prepared as a general letter, and so it was hard for me to say whether this was personal or not until she got to the last paragraph. And then she said, "David, I agree that the space program is the crown jewel of the federal government." She used my exact words.
Wow.
And that just thrilled me and made my day. And the other thing, Bill, was that despite all the horrible things that were happening that week, the week after the shooting, on the Wednesday, I walked outside at about 23 minutes after 3 in the afternoon, and I noticed that there were no planes in the sky. The airspace over Tucson was completely clear, save for one helicopter. And then as I looked over to the east, out came the largest airplane I had ever seen. It was Air Force One, and it flew right over our house at a fairly low altitude as it was preparing to land at Davis-Monthan. And I don't think I will ever forget that. It reminded me that perhaps all will be all right with the world after all. This was a very special thing that I will never, ever forget, Bill.
Air Force One on its final approach into Tucson International Airport, flying over the home and observatory of David Levy in the Vail, Arizona area.
It was so special, Bill. I just couldn't believe it. I had a camera. I got a couple of good pictures of it, and it was something that I will never, ever forget. And we are a nation that reaches for the stars. We reach for the stars. And I can't remember a day that we did it more than we did on that day when Air Force One flew over our house on its way to Tucson so that the president could give that marvelous speech that he gave and to visit Gabby in the hospital.
David, talk to me about and talk to our listeners about the Discovery's final voyage. Does it look like the Discovery may actually go off as planned in late February on its route to the space station?
Well, I hope so. I hope so, Bill. One of the things that I can promise you is that it won't take off if they continue to have problems with the cracks in the tank. You know, if this were during the middle of the sequence or in the middle of the program, it would have been easy. They just swap out tanks, but they're not making any tanks anymore. So they've got to fix this one, because if they don't fix this one, then they lose their final extra mission that's planned for later in the year. So I hope that it takes off. I honestly can't say right now. I think they're confident that it will and that they'll be able to repair these problems. And you know what? between you and me, they could probably launch it today and it would probably be fine. But they're not going to unless they're 100% satisfied that there aren't any cracks in the any part of that tank. The tank is extremely important. Every tank that has every airplane, every automobile has to be perfect, and that's especially true for the shuttle. And so we want to make absolutely sure that the shuttle is going to be safe before it flies, and it will be.
We're talking with David Levy. He is the science contributor to the Buckmaster Show. And when you see a full moon, think of David Levy, because normally we will be having David on the program when there is a full moon. And the reason for that is David Levy is up all night observing, looking for comets when there is not a full moon. Did I get that right, David?
Yes, you did. And I was even out last night in the evening to test out camera number 10. Bill, I now have 10 cameras.
Oh my goodness.
Simultaneously looking for comets at the same time that I look for comets visually. So it's quite a massive effort that takes place in the morning hours when there's no moon in the sky.
David, tell me, what is the bright object that I am seeing the last couple of mornings when I go out to get the papers at about 5:45 in the morning looking at the eastern sky? Am I looking at a planet or something? What is that very bright?
Yes, you are. You're looking at the morning star, the ancient Hesper, the ancient Phosphor, which is Venus. It is the planet Venus. As a morning star, it was known as Phosphor, and as the evening star, it was known as Hesper. But Tennyson, in his poem In Memoriam, noted that they were really one object. It's a single name, two names for a single object. So you're looking at the planet Venus. Actually, if you stay out a little later, just past dawn, you can still see Mercury as it's also coming in, and that's very exciting because not far from Mercury now is a spacecraft called Messenger, and Messenger is going to go right into orbit around Mercury in about a month from now. And that's going to be very exciting. We're going to learn more about Mercury than we ever have.
David, we've only got about 2 minutes left, but I want to put a plug in for Bill Hartman and Mark Sykes and the gang over at the Planetary Science Institute.
Yeah, I heard them on your show the other day.
They were on the program, and we had something very exciting, as you know, that happened on the Buckmaster Show. On Monday, we spoke with PSI researcher Melissa Lane, who is down looking for meteorites in Antarctica, and we had a wonderful conversation from Tucson to the South Pole. So, David, we're quickly running out of time. How is, for folks that don't know, you and Wendy have an observatory known as the Jarnac Observatory in your home. What does Jarnac stand for?
Jarnac is not an acronym. We're not very NASA about it. Jarnac actually is the name of the cottage that my grandfather had in Quebec, northwest of Montreal. And it's where I got some of my first dark sky experiences. So I decided to name our observatory after Jarnac, and the company that runs it is named Jarnac Observatory Incorporated. And
can folks get more information, David, at your website?
Yes, they can. And
quickly give us that.
www.sharingthesky.org is our website, and they're welcome to look at that to learn about Sharing the Sky, learning about the many things that we do to inspire people reach for the stars and to look up at the night sky.
David, I look forward to these monthly conversations around the time of the full moon. Thank you, David. Say hi to Wendy.
Okay, thanks so much, Bill. It's good to talk with you.
Thanks. David Levy, the science contributor to the Buckmaster Show. Do you believe that guy? He's discovered so many comets. Unbelievable. He will go down in history as one of the world's great comet discoverers. I am Bill Buckmaster. This is The Buckmaster Show. Check us out, buckmastershow.com. We will see you tomorrow. Have a great day.
KJLL, South Tucson.